Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Common Good. My name is Ian Simpkins, along with Brian Fromm, and we're thrilled to have back to the show the one and only David Koizet. Welcome back, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
We are pleased to have you, and to explain a bit of my excitement, would you just take a moment and introduce yourself to our audience, however you like?
Sure. Primarily, I'm the author of two books, one of which I think is especially relevant right now, Political Visions and Illusions. I taught undergraduate political science here in Canada for 30 years, and I'm a global scholar with a wonderful organization called Global Scholars Canada.
And David, obviously, we're excited to have you on to talk about last night's election. I'm curious, just from a personal end, did you sleep last night? What was it like for you as you were watching all of this take place last night?
Well, I have to tell you, to begin with, because I was traveling in the States a couple of weeks ago, I came back to Canada, and I'm now in 2 weeks of quarantine in our family room. So I'm sleeping on a fold-out bed these days and not getting the best sleep. So I sat in front of the television last night feeling overwhelmingly sleepy and thinking, I have to stay up until I find out who wins, because I pictured myself getting up this morning, getting on the air and with sleepy eyes saying, okay, guys, who won?
Right.
And of course, there's no answer to that now, which I rather suspected what would happen. I think the uncertainty that we're seeing right now, I think a lot of us, it's not very surprising to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and uncertainty is certainly a topic I'd love to talk to you about, because I think it's part and parcel with a lot of the division that we're seeing. And Brian and I are both pastors, so we see division maybe from a slightly different perspective, but it's certainly division nonetheless. Have you seen anything like this in recent memory?
Not to the same degree. I remember the election of 2000, which was also another closely contested election, and I remember the debates that occurred in the 2000 election between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and they were very gentlemanly, and it seemed to me that more often than not they agreed with each other, simply disagreeing on the means to get to the goals on which they both agreed. And it was a very it wasn't a really polarizing election as far as I could see. 20 years later, that's certainly not the case, and it seems as though people have hardened into their respective factions, which is not good for the long term health of the United States.
Yeah, just in terms of when we're going to know who the next president, in your opinion, what's kind of the best case scenario for the next 48, 72 hours, and what's the worst case scenario that we could be facing over, I don't know, the next weeks, months? I'd have no idea.
Well, the best case scenario is that a decision is made. It's a clear decision, and everybody agrees about it. If Biden wins and everybody recognizes that, then there's a smooth transition of power. The worst case scenario would take the United States in a direction which probably has not been seen for about, maybe 220 years, with the election of Thomas Jefferson in the year 1800. And at that point, there had never really been a transition of power before. Partisanship was just beginning to develop at that point. And there were a lot of fears that if Jefferson came to office, then there might be, I don't know, the worst sort of things might happen. In the worst case scenario, you would have disagreement. You would have possibly, if Biden ends up winning, Trump claiming that there was fraud and that and his followers would go along with him. And I think that's a bit of a scary scenario, because the democracy depends on there being general agreement on the means, on the mechanisms of electoral politics.
You mentioned a second ago how hunkered down people tend to be in their camps, more so now maybe than we've seen in a long, long time. And you mentioned that potentially has detrimental effects to the long-term health of the United States. Can you talk to me a little more about that?
Yes, yes. I think what we really need to see is an overall commitment, and I think this existed for couple of centuries, an overall commitment to the rule of law and to constitutional governance. In other words, there has to be loyalty to the system itself and the way that it functions and in its capacity to do justice. If we start becoming cynical about the system as a whole, and I think this has been accelerating for the last maybe half a century, since the 1960s at least, then people start to doubt as to whether the system really is doing justice. And then they start to become more loyal to their respective factions. Mm. And they believe that their factions are best able to do justice. And if other people on the other side do not agree with that, then too bad for them. But it's going to be make it more difficult for people to sit down, to be able to converse, to talk out their differences, rather than to yell at each other across barricades.
Mm-hmm. Something that really struck me last night, like you, I ended up going to bed, but like you, I was watching all the stuff coming in, and you know, they've all got their maps and they're going county by county or whatever else. I guess I never realized that essentially all the rural areas, at least it seemed like last night, were red or Republican, and all the big cities were blue in every state that they talked about. Has it always been that way? Is that kind of where our division lies, or is that kind of a newer phenomenon for us these days?
There may be people that will disagree with me here, but I think it's probably a bit of a newer phenomenon, at least for the last maybe 20 or 30 years. I still remember, I'm old enough to remember when the South was solidly Democratic. That started to change around 1948. It probably changed for good around 1968. It was more of a regional division from the time of the American Civil War for about 100 years after that. But it does seem as though there's kind of an urban-rural divide. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Chicago area, and I lived in DuPage County. And, of course, Cook County has always been solidly Democratic. DuPage County, solidly Republican. I'm not sure whether that's the case anymore, because I think it may be that suburban areas or metropolitan areas are now leaning towards the Democrats as a whole, and rural areas. And the red states, if you look at the map, the red states, with the exception of places like Texas and Florida, they tend to be dominated by the rural parts of the states. And I think that is something that, that really stands out.
Yeah. David, you're kind enough to join us for another segment where we're going to drill down a little deeper into some of what you're talking about here. But I'd love for the last minute or so we have in this segment, I know a lot of people felt maybe the same way that you did. They expected to be able to wake up today and at least have some clarity. And a lot of it just feels unsure. People are maybe feeling anxious right now. Could you just speak a word of encouragement or hope amidst sort of a bizarrely uncertain week?
Yes. Well, I can understand people feeling anxious. I feel anxious to some degree. Of course, my quarantine has something to do with that. But I would say that our ultimate hope is not in the smooth functioning of political systems. Mm-hmm. By God's grace, we have lived in countries that are smoothly functioning for the most part. But no system is perfect, and the American system is not perfect. The founders put together a very good system, but it really takes the American people to make it work. And that's something I think we need to focus on now.
That's such a good word. David, you retweeted Timothy Keller a couple of days ago, and he actually references you in this tweet. And it's an idea that I've seen a number of pastors and theologians writing about as of late. And he talks about denying that the way of Jesus is sort of this middle of the road centrism. And he says the gospel critiques all ideologies and all the main political platforms since the Enlightenment have been dominated by reductionism and idols. Can you tell me a little bit more about maybe what he means by that and whether or not you see that to be true?
Right. The idea of centrism is something that goes back to Aristotle, who thought that virtue was the mean between vicious extremes. You know, so courage is the mean between recklessness on the one hand and cowardice on the other. You know, and there have been a lot of people who have tried to synthesize that with a biblical understanding of obedience and what it means to be an obedient image bearer of God. I think what Keller is trying to say, and I would agree with him 100%, is that centrism is not really the way to go. You know, if there are two idols that are contesting for dominance over the public realm, then the wise way is not to find a kind of median between these two idols, because you're still in the realm of idolatry. So it's if you take the ideologies that are contesting for supremacy within the public realm now, and if you say, well, we'll take a little bit of this idol and a little bit of that, it's like taking Baal and Dagon and Isis and Jupiter and Zeus and saying, okay, we'll have a little bit and we'll just be very moderate in our use of these idols. I don't think that's the way to go, and I think Keller understands that, and that's certainly what I argue in my book. In other words, the Christian way is not a middle way. I think it's the true way, and I know that can sound cheap. It may sound too easy. The true way is something that we need to work out. We need to be very careful. The ideologies have slogans that we can throw at things: bread and peace, liberty, equality, fraternity, as the French revolutionaries had their slogan. I think the way, and of course that's what Christianity was called. If you read in the book of Acts, the first Christians were said to follow the way, with a capital W. The way is very distinctive, and it's not something that lends itself to easy slogans. Perhaps Jesus is Lord. That's the slogan that we would adopt. It doesn't tell us much about how we approach the political realm, but that's something that we need to sit down, and we need to sit down with our neighbors, even those who are not believers, and to try to work out what it means to do justice, to do public justice in the public realm.
David, we've talked so much about the church, even like our culture being divided politically right now. A really difficult question, but how do we turn this around as the church? How do we do better at that? Do you have any thoughts as to, you know, a way forward so that we kind of turn the tide here a little bit within the church?
Well, if you're talking about the church as a specific institution, where the word is preached, the sacraments are celebrated, which exercises discipline within the context of the membership, then I think what the church needs to do is to focus on the implications of living obediently in the whole of life. So sometimes we think that that living biblically is about going to church on Sundays. It's about being nice to your neighbors and to being nice to your family, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a whole world out there. God has placed us at the center, at the summit of His creation, as the eighth Psalm puts it. That we are given a stewardship over the rest of God's creation, and we need to work out the implications of that. But we first have to insert ourselves. We have to live within the biblical redemptive narrative and to find our place within the biblical story of salvation. And again, we're not going to have easy slogans that we can throw at problems, but we need to sit down and work things out, but always as Christians, not as people who have divided loyalties.
I wonder if your answer might be the same to this question, but one of the things that mostly off air, Brian and I, and again, this is part of being a pastor, is we're having to navigate conversations of people within our own church who are very, very right or very, very left or very, very neither, very confused, apathetic, or, you know, a whole gamut of emotions.
What counsel
or advice or insight would you give to someone who, let's say it's not until Friday, but their candidate loses? As a Christ follower, what can or should the response be when we find out that our candidate lost?
When I was a child, and if I was playing a game that I happened to lose, my parents would talk about being a good loser. and maybe there's something to be said for that for adults as well in the political realm. Whoever ends up winning the presidency, there are going to be difficult issues to deal with, and there are going to be considerable flaws that each candidate will bring to the public office which they hold, and to recognize that it's not the end of the world, to recognize that that whichever candidate wins, there will be considerable disadvantages for many people. Neither candidate, I think, is a perfect exemplar of justice. And I think that's what we have to recognize. We can pray that their good qualities will outweigh their bad qualities, and then we need to work ourselves to try to be good citizens, especially in our own local communities where we can really make an impact.
Mm-hmm. Let me let you put on your political pundit hat here. So, as we're watching, you said you've been watching all of the maps and everything. Yes. What should we be watching for? Like, what are you watching for? If this happens, then Biden's going to win. If this happens, then Trump's going to win. What are a couple of things we could be watching for over the next 48, 72 hours?
Well, I think we need to watch the marginal states, the states that are sitting on the fence at the present time. I have a map in front of me right now. I love maps. I absolutely love maps. I mean, I look at maps, and that's sort of how I think. You know, I see things in maps that I wouldn't if I just saw the statistics laid out in front of me. And what I'm looking at right now is I guess Wisconsin, Michigan, Nevada, and Arizona that are leaning towards Biden. I see Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia that are and Alaska that are leaning towards Trump. You know, mm-hmm. so I guess if I'm going to believe Reuters, and perhaps I'd see a similar map on other media sites, mm-hmm. as well, to watch those states and see how they go.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word. Our guest today has been David Koizis. He is a fellow in politics at the St. George Center for Biblical and Public Theology. He's also the author of a wonderful book, Political Visions and Illusions. I cannot encourage you enough to pick that up, read it, especially in times right now. David, you are such a joy to have on the show and such a breath of fresh air. Thank you for making the time to join us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. You've been listening to The Common Good on AM 1160. Hope for your life.